yet to rely on you, and more that should have read. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and have not said them, and become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy, and understand all mysteries, and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long, and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity wanteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall speak. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass, darkly, but then, face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. And now then, faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity.
Chapter 12, with the bestowal of the various gifts in the sovereign grace of the Spirit of God. Repeat to the chapter again, to the fully assembly to function rightly, having spiritual ability, it will answer to the functions of the assembly. If we just head to tomorrow in chapter 14, we shall see how those gifts have to be controlled when they are in exercise in the assembly, and how fitting it is between the giving of the gift and its proper exercise, this chapter is brought in, this chapter of love, perhaps one of the most testing, if not the most testing chapter for us in the whole of the New Testament, that whatever gift may be bestowed, in regard to its exercise and our desire to help one another, and underlying all this deep motive that prompted God to bring blessing to us, and that should be active in us and seeking to be a blessing to one another, the outflow of divine love one between another, if these gifts are really going to affect what they can affect for the blessing of the saints. It seems right that there should be spiritual desire to possess the gift. Why, as we said yesterday, it does seem that every one of us, as members of this body, are gifted. Yet it does say in that last verse, cannot earnestly the best gifts. The idea, I spiritual appreciation of that which is most helpful to the saints of God. That's the only place in Scripture where we are told to covet. But here it is. Covet earnestly the best gift, desire. And yet shall I unto you a more surpassing, a more excellent way.
Doesn't the more excellent way?
I'm sure it is. Right. I think that's what he's on to show. And I think when we come to read it down, we'll see how very, very necessary it is.
With regard to what we were reading yesterday, and the link up with the end of the chapter, just as the answer in the first place, is it therefore not of the body? The definite answer, of course, is yes, it certainly is of the body, whether it's used for its own ends or not. And here again the question is raised, isn't it? For all apostles, for all teachers, for all workers of miracle. The answer is just as definite, although it's not stated. What else could we say but no? They're not all the same. But there is something here, isn't there, that can be commonly true of us all, and that is love. And I believe that it would answer, wouldn't it, to all the defection that is suggested if one was saying that because he's an eye, he's not of the body. It would do away with all that defection, because there would be consideration, wouldn't there, one for another, in fact esteeming one better than themselves. That's what love would do, isn't it?
Indeed, the assumption is at the outset of this chapter that I may be the most gifted man in any company of saints of God. But if I rely on that mainly without the sincere godly desire of heart for the blessing of the saints of God, I can even with that gift probably do the more harm than good.
It's like the oil in the machinery, isn't it?
Yes, yes, quite.
Absolutely necessary. I mean, you go and run a motor car there and never put the dipstick down to have a look and see how your oil's getting on. You're out for trouble, aren't you? The whole of the machinery is going to be broken. Here's the oil, and we need plenty of it.
I think so, to remind us that while we ought to be exercised about whatever gifts the Lord has given us, to be in just as much exercise about gifts exercised in relation to the saints of God, that what is my motive in wanting that gift, desiring that gift? Is it a sincere motive, purely, to help the saints of God? Or is it for perhaps to call attention to oneself or assert oneself? The very opposite of the teaching of this chapter.
That would be what they were doing in Corinth.
I'm sure it was. Sure it was.
They themselves, by the gifts.
Right.
They certainly have gifts, haven't they?
Oh, they
stand behind it, you know, spiritual gift.
That's right. That's right.
We're enriched in all our truths. It'd be a good exercise, wouldn't it? That if there is any desire to take the platform at any time, whether it's ministering to the saints or preaching the gospel, what's the object of me getting up here? Sometimes said, you know, that when you get up on the platform, you don't only show what you know, you show what you don't know, because other people read their Bibles as well.
You couldn't say that much. Well, it isn't. I think love is the product of the divine nature that must underlie every gift, because no one without the divine nature could possibly be gifted of the Spirit. And the point is in the usage of it, In between the meetings yesterday, two of us were talking again about the distinction between the spirit of demon curse on Jesus, who was Daniel, you remember. And but it is not occurred to you, Daniel, that I may not speak with the spirit of a demon in the beginning, but I may speak from my own spirit, purely fleshly spirit. Oh, yes, he said, that's probably what I had in mind. I believe it was, you see. And if it is that, it is not with the sincere desire and helping the sin. It's some determination of my own.
Then really speaking, the working of these things out in a right and proper way requires not only the power of the Spirit, but the working of the divine nature in the individual.
Right.
Two working together.
I remember some years ago on a meeting, there was a brother got himself angry and left the meeting, and then he very humbly came back. And one of the younger brethren attempted to administer a rebuke, and he wouldn't have it. And yet another brother who said precisely the same things, he loved you and accepted it. He says, I'll take it from you, but I'm not prepared to take it from him. They know the difference in the men, you see.
These are certainly things that they desire to hear men speaking in this way, aren't they? But you know, one brother said that he listened to a brother from the platform, and he said what he said was as clear as daylight, but he said it was like going out on a real cold night with the moon shining bright. And enough to freeze your notes. Well, you know, we don't want that, do we? Now, this would correct that, wouldn't it? If there was real love behind what we are saying, and really a desire that the saints might be helped in what we say, if it's given with a desire like that and real love in our hearts, it's going to be effective, isn't it? It's not only going to convey light to them, but it's going to warm their hearts as well.
The fellow here speaking, making himself, as it were, sort of angry, showing her the possibility of men doing these things and yet not having that at all.
Well, he does speak of I to begin with. And remember picking up a note some years ago that simplified this chapter for me. The brother said, we went through the chapter as Paul begins the chapter, though I speak with the tongues of men, he says, go through the chapter, and instead of charity for I suffer long and am kind, I envy not, you'll soon get the link of this chapter. That was the most obvious that we are, and then that certainly helped me in the chapter.
For a little prefix, do I?
Do I? Well, that would do. Yes, quite. Do I?
Should the measure of my love to you, George, be the measure of my love to the Lord?
Oh, well, I suppose that's perfectly right. It ought to be. And we want to have to go to John's epistle to prove that that's true, you see. We ought to love one another. We ought to lay down our lives for the brethren.
Doing all his good to be the poor and to get his wealth to be bumped and not having not to him.
Well, yes, I do. I think I may do that, Stephen, just to get a bit of notoriety. Yes,
a hero.
A hero. Oh, yes, sir. Yes. Hero, that's it. Mm-hmm. He says, you see, we may have even the tongue of angels. Gift of prophecy. Maybe still don't understand all these mysteries of all knowledge. And I don't think I'm prepared to put myself into that person's head that I love it. All faith, no. I could remove mountains again. I have not love. I am nothing. Isn't that the point? I become nothing in verse 1. I am nothing in verse 2, and I am proper nothing in verse 3. But the positive sides of it, these are the negative sides, aren't they, in verses 1, 2, and 3? What we could do without making any gain out of the thing at all charity, as is the word written above. First of all, it suffers long, hath long been, and is kind.
Not doesn't say it when there's been something done or something derogatory said. It doesn't say, now that's not the first time that you said that. That's very often what we say.
Well, yes, yes, right. A brother once in a meeting put out, and then, as we said, I forget now who he was, he said, brother, I judge my spiritual growth on the basis of how much I can suffer at the hands of the saints. Thinking it out, I don't think it was wrong, you know.
According to the Apostle Paul, the Lord said he was going to show him how great things he would suffer. And when it came to a question of love, do you remember what he said even to the Corinthians in the very epistle that we're reading? That if his love was rejected, well, he says, be it so. He was going to continue showing love to them, even though it wasn't accepted of them.
The more I love, the less I do not.
That's the scripture I was trying to think.
I wonder if we might see a living example in it in the Lord's dealings with Peter. When all the scripture is not disguised more than once, Peter making a mistake, the last one the worst of the lot. And if then you remember in 20th John, isn't it? Yes, John 20, that Peter is tested on this very thing, brother, the main one of these. Only then, as we have said, we receive the thing worked out by the Lord. I think that again, Peter was hopeless. Hopeless of it being one of my disciples. That's the Lord.
This is divine love, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And it's just exactly the way that God has acted toward each one of us. He suffered long.
Yes.
Little hymn says, he called me long before I heard, before my sinful heart was stirred. And yet, he suffered long, didn't he? Well, isn't it wonderful that the character, the very nature of God himself is expressed toward each one of us. That's the way that we can act toward one another.
It is one again, John 17 and 26. 17th chapter, John 26.
Yes, what's that? Thank you.
But the Lord.
Wherewith thou hast loved me,
thou hast loved me,
maybe in them. Mm-hmm. And now you have. Well, it's definitely the working out of divine love amongst the saints of God. You know, it did on record in one of these books of the martyrs that I think it was an emperor who had condemned many of them to death. He says these Christians know they love one another. Perhaps if we were tested more, it might come out a little more.
Well, they shall all men know, you might say.
Yes. That's right.
Not of instances coming out of the people that the parties and parties. One of the things that was known by they loved each other. Spoken by outsiders.
And it's kind.
Yes, very good. And it's not only that you put up with the thing, you would show kindness in return.
Is the suffering root that has come from any quarter outside, isn't it said?
Well, there again, yes, pardon me passing on these remarks we've heard from other people, because probably have you would both have helped me. I remember again a brother once saying, I don't know this one, that if I am going to offend anybody, I'd sooner was the same than a man of the world. I don't think we shouldn't offend anybody. But I'm saying that because that, though I hope not, I would sooner offend you than an unconverted man. I might keep him away from salvation. Oh, out of the world. Only, of course, we cannot love worldlings as we love the saints.
The
relation
to the
suffering. Well, I mean, I'm following up what God told us. The world then gave his only begotten Son. That's where the love of God shone unto every one of us to begin with. But then I'm in a company not only where that love has been shown to all them, it is in them, and they're capable of reciprocating it. Yes, we may suffer long, as we said, at the hands of a worldling, lest anything we do or say may, or at least they may blame it. We know that they use these things sometimes, but they may blame us and a certain thing as keeping them away from the Lord.
Well,
no, I'm only saying that that's why I said they may see that, you see. No, we couldn't, but the responsibility with us is to show to all men the very love that God has shown to all men. I think we may say in our gospel preaching last night, that was brilliant. I mean, I'm sure anybody in here last night unconverted would doubt the brother that was preaching loved them very much, and as I had been missing.
Is thine enemy hunger? Is that the same?
That's the end of Romans 12, yes.
But what force the head did he cut off his right ear?
Pardon?
Cut off his right ear.
I know it was one of Peter's mistakes again, wasn't it? The Lord put it there. Yes. Right. Yes, and we are likely to know that, Tommy, I'm perfectly sure.
But it's nice to me that these two things are linked up, aren't they? Charity suffers long, and is kind. One is really negative, isn't it? They're suffering long. But being kind, that's something that's positive. It's really returning good for evil, isn't it?
Yes, and then envy is not. Why, we may speak in the realm of human language, someone that we dearly love, human language, but in advancement, some little blessing is bestowed upon them. And I'm glad we are that it is so. Why not then with one another in the divine circle? Why should I envy any of the saints of God that the Lord is blessing and leading on with? I should only thank God for it and pray that he might lead them still further. Why should we envy one of
them?
Yes, that's very good. Right. That's what you remember sometimes being said, that he's a very provoking brother. But provoking on the level of works. Wrong does not itself. Is not rash in what you're doing. Asserting yourself is not puffed up.
The one in the suggestion that's given in chapter 12 that says, because I'm the eye, I'm not of the body, really wanting itself, yes. Is it?
Right.
The other ones do it materially, I'm the one that matters. Want himself.
Vain glory is the literal meaning of it.
Oh, we are all bound up together, aren't we? We cannot do with it without each other.
That's what is often being pointed out, that whenever the saints were in persecution, why, the truth of this chapter shall not by the moon be sun.
See, there's two things that bring sheep together, you know, food and fear.
Yes.
And what we were saying before, with regard to the circumstances, if circumstances were brought about, you know, persecution arising, it would certainly show the love that there is in the hearts of the saints that would band themselves together.
So,
this illusion that separated the saints. And the modern world, one of the best illusions of drawing together the saints.
The form does not itself act this way. Being glorious is not like that. Does not believe itself unseemly. Perhaps the new translation gives us simpler words about this, more what we would call the language we've been taught at school. Not seeking at all. Not easily provoked. And just not impute evil as the sort of thinketh no evil. I believe that's the greatest danger we have amongst ourselves today. Imputed evil when there's no evil intent whatever. It's been said again in a wise statement that when saints of God come to a judgment without knowing all the facts, you can be absolutely sure it will be wrong. We draw conclusions about things, we see things, oh yes, we're quite sure we know. And it's been surprising sometimes, one has run across many of these things that one has been told that when you got, as it were, behind and misheard what was happening, it was a wrong judgment and it's very bad.
Again, that would be nice, wouldn't it, as you were suggesting before, to put this little phrase in front of these. Do I seek my Europe? Am I easily provoked? Do I think evil? These are testing things, brethren, aren't they?
Yes, I'm sure. That's why I said, Anthony, I believe this is one of the most testing chapters in the New Testament. There was no hand to fix it, you know.
It would be better to take the eye out of the first lot and put it in the second. The eye is always the middle letter to the tongue of the prose.
Middle letter of sin, anyhow.
It is. Rejoice not in iniquity. Someone has said, but then things have to be dealt with. Yes, they have to be dealt with. But if there is anything to be dealt with, let us deal with it in a spirit like this. I'm sorry if things like this are happy things for the saints of God. It's a bad job for saints that are like that.
Very much exposed, the weapon of the old nature.
Oh,
I mean, we rejoice in iniquity.
Sure it does.
Well, listen to God if he's not founded on truth.
Right.
Is there something special in this word, iniquity? I once heard Mr. Hines saying that all iniquity is sin, but all sin is not iniquity. And he suggested that iniquity, which of course I can say through the reading of the Old Testament, there's a great deal of truth in what he said, that it's the perversion of God's order and God's truth.
Right. It's always the insertion of the will of man in the things of God.
Religious sin.
Yes. It's man coming in, you see, setting God's order to one side and making an order of his own.
Sin?
No, we have to do that. We've got to be very careful, haven't we?
Well, yeah, I'm just going to back that up with a statement that would show the need of understanding that word. In the second chapter of 2 Timothy, let he that nameth the name of the Lord depart from iniquity. To depart from sin. Well, no, I'm afraid I'm going to be young to do that. I'll take it with me. But iniquity, yes, if the human mind is intruding into the things of God, then I'm going to leave it. But the very antithesis to that that works is rejoiceth in iniquity. No, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. I think the next one is in verse 7, Lord covered, isn't it? All things covered. Again, we need to be guarded. This again is our dealings with one another individually. When public sin is committed, then because of the Lord's name attached to the assembly, these things have to be dealt with. But there again, even when they are things that may be, and we may thank the Lord for the fewness of occasions when that has happened. But if it has come in to see why the sorrow, the regret and the hesitation of the very people who are called upon to deal with the thing. Not happy about the job a little bit.
But is he the one who thinketh of him?
Thinketh no evil, does not impute. Aye. Did I only see you in circumstances? The first time ever I went to the meeting in Dundee, over 30 years ago. I saw a man come up the street, I thought, well, that looked like a brother. He walked out of the side of a public house. It was a prayer meeting. So after the meeting, I turned on, here's this brother sitting in the back seat. Well, I said, so you were in a public house? No, he said, it isn't. It's a door on the side of a public house. But thanks for telling me that. He says, I'll have to go that way again. No, I might have gone away and said, you know, I said, so brother, they haven't done anything. He walked into a pub. See, that's
the thing. You might see two brothers, you might see a brother talking to somebody in the street, you might be a bookmaker.
What?
It all depends who's company one another is in, you know. You see, if I'm letting them talk to me about the horses, and what's going to win the next race, well, I'm in his company. But if I'm telling him about the love of God, and about the way of salvation, he's in my company. So we've got to be very careful with our discrimination, haven't we?
With a sort of imputation from the secondary.
Oh, yes. I mean, it isn't only that I'm thinking after with the your account. I'm quite sure I'm right, you see.
Mark doesn't do that.
No. He would hope for the best every time.
Yes. How would you say that second clause in verse 7, believeth all things? Do we believe all things?
No. It's not the point that I may have a judgment about something. It's just as well to use one another about this. Perhaps in some circumstances you've caught it with a bookmaker. Or you say, look, George, I had met a fact by an invalid man before I was converted, just tried to present the gospel to him. Well, I believe you. He said, oh, come to me with a tale like that, you say. I think that's the point.
Believing good.
Yes, I think that's a great question.
Bearing.
That's the word I think translated covers all things. I think these are our dealings with one another, and not as we have said public sin. Because in this very epistle the apostle had told them in chapter 5 to put that man up in me. He didn't tell them to call that. These are really our dealings one with another, aren't they? But with you now,
situation was cleared up according to God and according to the truth of God, they were to show up to the
person. Oh, yes, right. Take them back.
Yes. Peter, in his epistle, I suppose he quotes an experience. Love covers the multitude.
What part of his epistle? No, it's here. Love covers.
But is it open? In relation to love covering the multitude of sins.
That's right. I see now where you are. Yet even converted the sinner from the error of his ways. Isn't that the quotation? And you are, yes?
It's still in that chapter. Covered up the multitude of sins.
That's right.
It's the very opposite working of things which stir it up.
That's right.
Like mud in a pond.
Right. Somebody's going to say it to
this. This same look, when they look for the multitude of sins, surely it isn't for a book on that sin.
No, well, it's rather all the dealings between each other. And maybe, of course, a reputation too. But there's the other side, you see. It's coming, suffereth long, coming. And if you offend me, I may develop a hard spirit against you. And in spite of any approach, if you have something to do with you, it's coming, you see, it's there.
But you quoted, haven't you, from the fifth chapter that the man was dealt with the sin?
It was any public sin, that's right.
That was what from that person, you know.
We have to be sure, of course, that it is a public sin that has been committed, and not merely a failure that we are all prone to.
Mr. Stewart, I guess I'm a bringer, John. I'm not trying to tell something about it. I'm just telling you, Mr. Stewart. I give it to myself.
And then if you have any love for me, you'll tell me about it when I see you, and you ask me if it's true.
In the same way, you would possibly tell the person that you know has done it wrong, in love, trying to get you to confess it.
Oh, yes, we should go.
Yeah.
Right.
If you have any love for them, you say it.
Say it again, Mr. Wayne. Speak up.
If you have any love for me, you. If I have any love for you,
then if I go to Africa, well, he wouldn't need to tell me about it. That's the thing. And if that's what the bearing is here, then the knowledge of these divine things is going to pass away one of these days. We're going to be in the thing.
We would like to say that the mental love is a big portion of this tonight.
Oh, I believe that. I'm sure of that. And we've been singing about that in the very name of Brother Gaylock today, 142.
Would there be a difference in the knowledge that we get in the second verse and the knowledge that we get in the eighth verse?
In the second. Oh yes, all knowledge, that's right. But the point being, I think, that it may be because, there again, as we say, we'll have to be excused in pointing to one another, that I may have grown vastly in the knowledge of divine things. I may have dwelt upon a more simple brother's is referring to our trans- comes knowledge. These things are given and spread in the gifts, you remember, in the previous chapter, where the people are illuminating the saints of God at the moment, because of the very limited conditions in which we are. But now, when that which is perfect has come, we don't need these little adjuncts, these little teachers, as it were, in that day, we'll be in the thing completely.
These are essential then for the building up and the perfecting of the saints.
Absolutely. And you see, that in itself ought to humble me. Do you think that when I read chapter 12 about all these gifts, I think they are only one. I'm absolutely dependent on all these others. The Bible can boast of that.
You meant to tell us today on the coast of Well, that's not the way to do the reception.
why they come about.
That's the best in
time. Oh, it is indeed. That's the how much the thing has affected us.
Yes, the possibilities of considering the Word of God together like this, if we can only carry these things prayerfully into the presence of God, it will humble each one of us, you know, and it will have such an effect upon ourselves that everybody that we come into contact with will benefit by it, both the saint and the sinner.
That verse you quoted, Peter, is in the next chapter, by the way, verse 20. Brethren, be not children of understanding. That's a teenager. How be it in malice, be ye children? That's a being an aunt. How does that one there? But in understanding be made. But he said, when I became a man, I put away childish things. Well, now, isn't the apostle giving them credit for that, but to say, well, now, you are capable of being men. You are men, really? Well, now, act like men.
I thought Jerome, this was a permission to the commandee,
Well, it is a bit further down in verse 12, but I think verse 11 is where we are today. When I became a man, I think he's speaking there of natural growth, you see, that having passed through the infant stage, the teenage stage, he's arrived at maturity, full-grown manhood, with an ability to judge your things in the right way. I think that's verse 11. I'm suggesting that's exactly what ought to happen to us in the Christian circle. And you may see perhaps a young person, as most of us have had in the meetings, and something has cropped up and they've stayed away and lived on after them. And look, oh, well, you'll have to learn to get over these little things a bit and get them back. But when you see a brother who's sat breaking bread 40 years doing the same thing, well, it is a bit distressing, isn't it?
Could you say there's an equality here in the natural government? This is John, children, and then the father. Is that somewhat different?
Well, there is growth in the divine nature, I do not doubt, and the apprehension of these things. Here it's a similar, isn't it? Similar. Oh, mind you, I don't know how they measure that's true, too. I mean, when first we came to the meeting, we heard things for the first time, hardly knew what they were talking about. And probably somebody had been rude to us when we first came along, they wouldn't have come back. But not after 40 years, surely.
But what you were pressing before is something we need to take notice of. This is the way that we act toward one another, isn't it?
Right.
This is what the suggestion is. And if he uses a natural illustration with regard to a child and a grown-up man, he's using that as a leverage in connection with the Christian life.
Spiritual growth.
Yes, and how we have got on in our souls. You see, the person might say anything at all. John in his epistle, he says, I'm not concerned what you say. He says, I'm more concerned as the way that you act. If a man say that he loves God and loves not his brother, he says, he's a liar. John said, I'm not concerned about what you're saying. If your action belies what you're saying, I don't believe a word you're saying. And that's what we've done in this 13th chapter, isn't it?
He also says, if you walk in the light, if you walk in the light, he says in John 2, there is the light, he is the light, the fellowship one with another.
Oh, that's it right enough. But then you're characterized then by the light. God is light, you're characterized by divine nature, and I suppose as far as light is concerned, the divine character. But then he says, we see through a glass, darkly, obscurely. This word is only used twice. There's been a lot of controversy about it. James is the only other place we get this word, you remember, in the first chapter. Like a man beholding his face in a mirror, and straightway forgetting what kind of a person he is. It's a reflective thing. I don't miss a can't be in one place, as he doesn't like this idea of a mirror. I know Matthew's referring to the third of 2 Corinthians.
But the word definitely is a mirror in the ancient
verse. Is it like that?
Dave's got that in my margin, too.
A mirror? That's really what the word is.
Right.
It's only used twice a year, and I think James clearly shows us what it does mean. And for myself, I'm perfectly sure the reference here is to the scriptures. There's a shining out to me as I come here today in these Bible readings. It's like a mirror reflecting spiritual things. It's reflected to us here in black and white. But just as a mirror, we understand, never gives a direct, an exact representation, it only gives a pretty good likeness. So these things of God. You know yourself when you try to visualize and somebody says, well, what will we talk about when we get to heaven? Well, yes. What will we look like? Yes, well, there we are. We know on that day when we see it in perfection. You may have a different image in your mind about the thing than I have in my mind. We only see through a glass darkly. And then what have we learned the most about?
It is not seeing through a glass darkly.
Obscurely. It's an enigma, actually, Peter, the word. It's enigmatical.
Is it a pattern that the glass being dark, or is it my vision that is blocked?
No, I think the point is you don't get the thing as clearly in your heart as you would like it. You just get a bit of an outline of the thing. That's all we can get today, yes?
Is that the glasses wrong?
No, the means of the communication can't give you the thing perfectly. That's what the idea is here.
The verse explains it, doesn't it? But then,
it's the verse, you say, that's right. Then we will see it, in fact, it says.
Everything that you would do,
that's right.
So the full
light of it,
the seal of the glass, darkness is heaven. Why is it? Because my vision is blocked to the heavenly things, or is it because the glass I'm looking through is obscure?
But when the apostle speaks about the incident of him being caught up to the third heaven, he said he heard words that were not lawful. He couldn't put them into language.
Enigma.
Yes. What he saw there, it's not down here. So he couldn't give it a word. I mean, before that he called that a table, it had to be made. The thing's made and then it's called a table. Well, the things are not here that the apostle saw beyond it. And we can only see things in an obscure way now. But then when we get there, we're going to see the whole thing clear.
What is the heaviness of Jesus' fear?
No, it's the means of communication.
Yes, we have to shut them, see the expression, with all the pain to cover the spectacles you're looking through.
Well, it does need, of course, we're not wiping out the need of exercise of heart and ourselves. Even if you've seen these things. But I don't think it's our state or our growth that's in view here, but the means of communicating the thing. I mean, if you see, as a brother knew the Bible from cover to cover, I doubt it, by the way, we've heard these things before, but there it is, that's the means of communicating. Well, suppose that was possible, and I have got the thing from cover to cover. It's still not the perfect image of the thing. No, just the representation.
Talking about being dark,
obscurely, and then they went, right?
about the Spirit.
Huh?
It's a means of communication about the Spirit.
No, the Spirit is on the line of reception. It's the Spirit that illuminates the way you want to see it. If I have the Spirit, I don't understand a thing about it. But even what is here, it is dark. We talk about these things. To give them a very clear presentation, we just can't. The means of communication is as far as we can go today, and I think as much as ever we are capable of understanding. But when we see the thing itself, apart from an intermediary and a communication, then we see it in all its perfection.
Aren't we to be glorified?
Aren't we finding, even in meetings like this, that thoughts that we once had about scriptures are being adjusted by different things that are being said? Things are becoming a little bit more clear to us, but still, not in the fullness of the light in which the things are. And neither will they be until we get to glory.
It is not more in the light of revelation then.
Well, it is. It's the way things are brought to us, you see. The means by which God communicates them to us.
The footnote helps a bit, looking through a window obscurely, like these windows here, instead of a transparent, clear view of what's outside.
Right. But James uses the word, you see, as a mirror. You may say to me, see, you've got a spot on your nose. Oh, I've got a mirror. Oh, yes, sure, I have. But you can see that spot more clearly than I can see it in the mirror. The point being is the means of communicating the thing.
But I only meant that the mirror wasn't absolutely clear.
That's right. And so far as these divine, heavenly, spiritual, glorious things are concerned, it cannot be anything else. If they did shine out clearly, they wouldn't be capable of taking them in.
That's the winter's topic, I'm sure, yes.
Well, you see, the next part of the verse, I think, explains it. Now, I know in part. I haven't yet seen the thing in perfection. You'll find that word that is an enigma. If you look it up on the concordance, it's an enigma.
It says here in my mountain.
Enigma, does it? You've got a good part with it. It doesn't say that, right? But I know that's the meaning of the word, I think, yes.
That's
well, that's just what the word puts me. But now I know in part, but then I shall know. Oh yes, I won't have a mirror on that day. The thing will be there in all its fullness and clarity. Then I shall know. I know just as clearly as from that side I am known.
Isn't it a wonderful thing for the apostle himself to be saying, I know in part?
Yes, now that's very good. I think it's even an apostle could say that.
Even God, that apostle, he says, you have an answer for the whole matter. Neither that any man teach you, we know all things. Render the Bible tells us, spirit who has shut us into the very depths of God. And finally, we were interested in this matter.
What's that mean?
And finally, we were interested in this matter.
Oh, I quite agree with that. Only as I said, I don't think he's on the spiritual growth here at all. But rather the means of communicating these things. He says, we see, you see. But now abideth faith. There again it will explain itself in hope and love. These three, but the greatest of these is love. These two are going to fail, aren't they? And the one thing that's going to be left is love.
The apostle has already had the experience of the man in Christ having that. He's writing here.
Pardon?
He must have known something about what he was talking about.
Well, he must, because he says, now, brother, I've seen some things that you haven't seen yet, and I cannot tell you a thing about them. Faith, hope, and love are the three marks of Christianity. They come together 10 times in conjunction in the New Testament, and people care to look them out. They are called in the 6th chapter of Hebrews the things that accompany salvation. But I think that one has found them, there may be more, but one has found them 10 times in conjunction with each other.
Faith and hope.
Oh yes.
The
love, what has been formed in the divine. You see, there's a time coming when we'll not need either faith or hope. I need faith in things I cannot prove, and I need hope in things I cannot see. But in that day, the proof will be there, and will be before our eyes. And the one thing that will abide is still what has been formed in our hearts of the divine nature.
Character never failed,
never failed.
Jesus tells me. That
is who was in the center of the rainbow. It's the greatest thing in the
whole of the universe. Well, I'm sure it is. It says not here, very quite.
This is something, you know, that existed before the world was made. There was love between divine persons, wasn't there? There was love that's made before the foundation of the world. And it's that which is great to stand and go on right into eternity.
This would be
our discussion of all the subjects. This is the perfect example of the whole thing.
What lives? What of lives? Yes. Love lives.
Well, that's the exhortation. And if we just remember it saying, though we'll probably refer to it again tomorrow, but it saying comes in between the, shall we say, the understanding of the various gifts that are scattered in the assembly, and these gifts properly in function, that this remarkable chapter comes in between. Now you have the gift, now just